You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Guys, before we dive on into today's episode, we have a special announcement.
Yeah, in case you missed the announcement earlier this week, Through the Gryffindor is going on tour. We're calling it Through the Griffin Tour.
Yes, it's going to be just like the episodes that you see every single week here on the main show, but we're going to be doing it live with a studio audience. Is that how you would describe it? Will there be a laugh track?
I mean, I don't know if it's like a studio, but there will be a live audience, like a theater audience.
Ooh.
Even better.
It's going to be so much fun, you guys. We're going to be doing the main episode recording. We're also going to have a Q&A and some trivia baked in there as well. It's going to be such a good time. If you want to go and buy tickets, you can do so by going to the show notes and going to each of the respective venues. We've got one for Boston, New York City, Philadelphia, and DC.
Yeah, it's going to be super good. It's happening this June. So I'll throw some dates in there for you as well. It's going to be Boston on Sunday, June 2nd, New York, Monday, June 3rd, Philadelphia, Wednesday, June 5th, and Washington, D.C., Thursday, June 13th. So mark your calendars.
Yes, we hope to see you there, and on with the episode.
Welcome, dear listeners. I'm Jonathan Carlin.
And I'm Benjamin Carlin.
And we invite you to join us through the Gryffindor, your one-way ticket to the enchanting world of Harry Potter. So grab your wands, dust off your broomsticks, and join us as we unlock the treasures behind Chamber of Secrets Chapter 9, The Writing on the Wall.
Oh, man. Okay, so first things first is that we've got, it's sort of like an interesting collection of details for this one. We've got the writing on the wall, which is sort of more of a reference to the writing on the wall from the last chapter.
Yeah, sort of like, I'm not sure the title is necessarily what this chapter is so much about.
Yes, yeah. And then in addition to that, you've got Moaning Myrtle, who does make an appearance inside of this chapter as like the primary subject of the chapter art. But also probably not like the overall most informative chapter regarding, you know, her character.
No, I know. It's interesting they chose like Moaning Myrtle as the chapter art when in fact like Professor Binns, a different ghost entirely, probably gives you like the meat of the chapter that you're like really interested in. It's like you actually like you could have even just called it the writing on the wall and put Professor Binns on there, and it would have made like a lot more sense. He's like, oh, he's talking about the writing on the wall, which says the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah. Or possibly had him at like a chalkboard or something.
Yeah,
it's like the writing on the wall. But yeah. It's in a class, and he's a teacher, and he's the one who's going to tell him about the Chamber of Secrets. This chapter is kind of interesting to me because it's like I have now spent so much time with this story that it does not fully occur to me that the characters inside of the story don't know that the Chamber of Secrets was opened 50 years prior.
Oh, right. Yeah. Like at this point, they don't know.
Yeah.
But like
yeah.
Some characters would know.
I guess so. This is like one of those things where it's like, was it believed? I guess it was believed that Hagrid opened the Chamber of Secrets 50 years prior and that Aragog
is the monster.
Yeah. But the thing about that, and we can get to it a little bit more later, but I mean, Binns basically dismisses it as if like, this is just a legend and I only deal in facts.
I know. I was wondering about that too, because like when I got to that exact line, I was like, you're acting like another member of staff presently wasn't like expelled for opening the chamber.
Right.
Like, or else is like the impression that like the rumor was that the chamber had been opened, but actually it turns out it was just Hagrid who had a monster.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. These are the big questions. Because I guess the other potential possibility here is that we don't know exactly when Professor Binns is said to have died. So I guess it could have predated the opening that happens in 1942.
That's true. I guess he could have died since that. I guess maybe he wasn't like Tom Riddle's teacher.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yep, yep. In which case he might not be able to know information that comes after his death.
I guess that's possible. Okay, yeah, yeah. That all of that is plausible.
Yes, yes.
I'll indeed. Give it to him.
So anyway, yeah, with that being said, we can go ahead and we'll dive on into our frame by frame, as it were, of the chapter.
Yes, we shall. So right out of the gate, just the very second line, it talks about Filch showing up on the scene, attracted no doubt by Malfoy's shout, which is interesting to me because like it is established earlier in this book that there is a mysterious connection between Filch and Mrs. Norris. So it's interesting that it's like, oh, he was attracted by Malfoy shouting, not by the strange connection between him and the cat.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's like all of a sudden, like whatever that spider sense that Filch has attached to Mrs. Norris, like just went black.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, wait a second, what's going on?
Right,
I can't see what she's seeing. What's happening?
I know, yeah. It seems like that would be more the reason he shows up, which I guess maybe it is, and this is maybe just Harry's opinion of the situation.
Dude, I can't lie, though. I honestly feel like Malfoy getting away with how he behaves inside of this whole scene. So just as a reminder, basically, like, everybody just entered the Great Hall from, or not, I'm sorry, the corridor from the Great Hall where they were all having the Halloween feast. And Draco basically immediately comes to the center of the scene where there's like blood writing on the wall. There's the petrified Mrs. Norris. And Draco was just ended the last chapter by saying, enemies of the air, beware, you'll be next, mudbloods. It's like, this is like one of those things where it's like, I don't really know how to like really go about it, but I mean, it feels like such hate speech, you know?
It's like, I know. It's
like he should be in a lot of trouble for how all of this situation plays out.
He really absolutely should be. I mean, he's just shouting racial slurs in a place that like, it's not like, oh yeah, the majority of people just kind of like roll with it. It's like, that's not how it is. Like people do not like this word.
I know.
Like,
yeah.
You know, as established like several chapters ago.
Yes.
And like clearly there's been an attack and the writing on the wall is threatening other people. And now you're slurring those people loudly.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Dude, how did you walk away from this?
The thing is that like, I feel like Malfoy is always sort of like touted as this like super popular, well-liked character amongst the rest of the students, and it's just sort of like, I don't think that other people would like this kid.
I know,
like, on
right?
this basis, it's like, and if they do, then I'm like, Harry, are we sure we want to be here?
Right.
You
yeah.
know, at this school, right. Like if he's the popular kid, it's like,
I know.
Like, no, I'm just kidding. I mean, but like, not kidding. Just I think it's just so ridiculous to me that like Malfoy just always seems to be like Harry is always so on the unlucky side of everything. Like he always shows up and then like teachers show up right then.
I know.
And then like Malfoy always like says something and nobody's there to hear it.
Right.
It's like, oh, come on.
That's exactly how it goes. And then so Filch shows up, which, as you just pointed out, is after Malfoy makes his like shout, like, I mean, it says attracted no doubt by Malfoy's shout. So like he doesn't hear what Malfoy says or isn't there to like get the full like brunt of it, whatever. Filch immediately assumes it's Harry.
Yes.
Which is baffling to me. Like, I'm not sure how obvious it is in this now crowded corridor that Harry is the one who discovered it. But even so, he immediately jumps to the conclusion that Harry has killed his cat because Harry saw the quick spell folder on his desk and has deduced that Filch is a squib, and he is immediately pairing that information with the writing on the wall and has decided that Harry has killed his cat, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what is crazy to me about all of that is that like Filch is surprisingly informed enough to understand that enemies of the air would include like muggle-born people and non-magic people.
Okay.
Like, how does... Like, I'm surprised he's aware that, like, what that means. Like, of the... I'm surprised he's able to, like, parse out the context of the writing on the wall.
Like he's just putting everything together so quickly. I mean, to me, I can never imagine exactly how this scene would physically play out. Like, if you were to, like, set up, like, a drawing and, like, put everybody as closely as possible. Because that's the other thing, too, is that by the time he arrives on scene, like, Harry, Ron, and Hermione are, sure enough, present for it, but otherwise the hallway is full of students.
Yeah.
So, like, are they standing closer-ish to the scene of the crime than everybody else?
I think so, yeah. Okay. But even so, like, it doesn't say, like, Slytherin's monster has been unleashed. It says, enemies of the air, the Chamber of Secrets has been opened again. Enemies of the air, beware. It's like, if you're unfamiliar with the legend of the Chamber of Secrets, at this point you will have no idea who the heir is, or like what that Slytherin house is involved at all.
Right.
You know?
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's like where I'm like, I can't tell if Filch is just so up in his own business that he's just like, oh, almost certainly, like,
yeah,
you just found out something about myself, and surely that is something that I should be ridiculed for, and look at how you've immediately done it right away.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
it's very insecure.
It's like, goodness gracious. So anyway, just all around, pretty wild. But that's like, I actually wrote this at the end of the chapter, but like, there's absurd logic that I feel like happens in this chapter just over and over and over again. So I'll be curious to see if I can like find the other examples as we sort of like parse through everything. But I kept just being like, this is a weird way to read this situation.
And yeah.
This leads the charge, because it's kind of like, well, okay. Yep. Sure. Yep. Yep. Why not?
And then, yeah, you're right. It'd be interesting to know what like the exact setup looks like, because then Dumbledore arrives and he also is sort of just like, yeah, Harry, Ron, Hermione, come with me. Like, I can tell you three are involved. Like, he has no reason to suspect that Harry had did anything. You know, he's just stumbled upon the scene as well.
Right, right. Yep. Then what this is like one of those. So it's the very next page, because Dumbledore is basically saying, like, you know, like, let's all go. And, you know, Lockhart says, jumps in. And he's like, my office is near, Headmaster, just upstairs. Please feel free. And Dumbledore says, thank you, Gilderoy. And I mean, I know that he is like referred to McGonagall as like Minerva before.
Yeah.
But they also seem like best friends.
Yeah.
You know, but and so I don't know if this is actually one of those things, but I immediately when I read thank you Gilderoy, I was reminded of like all the number of times that Dumbledore corrects Harry when he just refers to Snape as Snape and not Professor Snape.
He doesn't call him Professor.
He doesn't call him. Yeah,
thank you, Professor Lockhart.
Thank you, Professor Lockhart. Yeah, yes. He says thank you, Gilderoy. And so I was like, I can't tell if this is like a very, very, very subtle. Like, you got to know Dumbledore to know that that's like him being like, yeah, I just called you by your first name, not your like professional name.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
like a small little act of like quiet disrespect from Dumbledore. Yeah,
that's exactly how he would do it too.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Like not everybody could even tell that it was like impolite, but like by Dumbledore's own standards, maybe a little bit.
Like, I'm on to you. Yeah. Also, like when we get to Lockhart's office, it says the pictures were dodging out of sight, their hair in rollers. Like, his vanity is such that even paintings of him with like permanent curls painted into their hair still go through the process of putting their hair in rollers.
I know.
Like,
yep.
So funny.
I highlighted the exact same thing. I'm like, goodness gracious, how ingrained is it into his person that like, because I think what we've said before, or like what we've discovered, is that like when, like the reason that paintings know something about the subjects they represent is because the subject is usually present to sort of like inform the artist on like their like knowledge and information.
I think they
like
can even like coach the painting itself.
Yeah. So like it would be interesting that this would be, you're exactly right. It's like it's a painting. You don't have to fix it every time. And it's like, no. Yeah. It's like, it's part of who we are.
You right.
Know? This is part of our routine.
That's right. It's how we do it. You know, we gotta look sharp. Okay.
That's exactly it.
Moving on. Speaking of his, how impressed he is with himself. Lockhart has so many great lines in this particular chapter, or especially in this scene, where his next line is, it was definitely a curse that killed her, probably the transmogrifying torture. I've seen it many times. So unlucky I wasn't there. I know there was a counter curse that would have saved her. I love that line. So unlucky. Oh my gosh. But so anyway, what I think is interesting, what's interesting here is that he mentions the transmogrify and torture, which I was like, I wonder if that's real. Like, I doubt he knows the counter curse and has definitely never seen it, but no one is like, excuse me, what on earth did you just say?
Right.
So like,
right.
To me, I think the transmogrify and torture must be a real thing. And it sounds like, I was trying to look it up, like, is it mentioned anywhere else? And it sounds like this is basically the lone time it's mentioned, but because no one bucks at it, it's like, it sounds like it is a real thing, which would involve torturing people by some sort of like transfiguration or like altering their appearance or something like that. Okay. And obviously it seems, and in this moment, he's assuming that she's dead. So it also seems like the transmogrify and torture is a deadly curse of kinds, which means that it is a curse that would torture you and then kill you. So it's almost like a like combination of the Cruciatus curse and Avada Kedavra.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Right. So however,
sounds pretty awful.
I know, it does sound pretty awful. And it sounds like, well, then why wouldn't it be an unforgivable curse? And I think he says that as well. It's like there's a counter curse for which there aren't for the unforgivable curses. So that seems like the line that's separating it from unforgivable is that it can be countered.
Yeah. And this is, I kind of noted something else because I do think it's interesting you even pointed that out as well. Like, I think almost like in order to be a good liar for Lockhart, it's almost like he has to be pretty well informed so he can sound like he knows what he's talking about, even if he can't actually execute the proper things.
Right.
Because like, I think on the next couple of pages or so, they're talking about how Mrs. Norris is in fact just petrified, and Dumbledore basically reassures Filch that Professor Sprout has recently managed to procure some mandrakes, and as soon as they have reached their full size, we will have a potion made that can revive Mrs. Norris. And Lockhart immediately butts in and says, I'll make it. I must have done 100 times. I could whip up a mandrake restorative draft in my sleep. And so it's like, I mean, like, Dumbledore never said those words, so it's not like, it's like he just said, we will have a potion made.
Right.
And like, he knows what is in fact the actual correct potion.
Right.
So it's like, in order to be like a good liar, it's like you got to know enough to sound like you know what you're talking about.
Right.
But this is like always the thing with Lockhart, where I'm like, you yourself must be lying to yourself so aggressively that you don't even know that you're lying anymore.
Or could it be that, like, from his point of view, like, he thinks it would look suspicious given his reputation if he didn't volunteer?
Oh, that's an interesting thought as well. Like almost like, I would of course volunteer. I mean, Snape's right here, so he'll obviously be the one who ends up doing it, but I can at least say it.
Exactly. Like,
yeah, that actually sounds more like him now that when you look at it through that lens.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, he can figure that part out later, but in the moment I need to be impressive.
I need to be impressive. Yeah. Yeah. That's
like,
that's
I'm obviously not going to make it. I have no idea how to do that.
right. Yes. And that's exactly it. Cause he's around qualified people who know better.
Right.
It's like, you're only going to get away with this for so far. Like,
right.
You know, they're going to figure it out.
And he just keeps volunteering for stuff.
He does. It's just ridiculous.
Let's see. Then, Dumbledore immediately proves him wrong, and let's see. Da-da-da-da-da. He says something about, Ouagadougou. Right?
Yes.
Dumbledore was now muttering strange words under his breath, tapping Mrs. Norris's wand, but nothing happened. She continued to look as though she'd been recently stuffed. I remember something very similar happening in Ouagadougou, said Lockhart. A series of attacks. Which is just him marketing his own book to the other people. And he says he clears it up with various amulets, which is interesting because amulet is not something that comes up again ever in Harry Potter, or certainly not something anyone makes use of.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. I feel like at some point in time, Mundungus Fletcher is like the type of like person who like might be selling such things to ward off, like, you know, like dark spell detectors or something like that. And it's like, it's all just a bunch of like...
Exactly. It's a bunch of like fake stuff.
It's just fake. Yeah.
Which it's so interesting, like that, like within the story, so many like magical things you know of are like, oh yeah, those are real trolls. Those are real vampires. Yeah, those are real. But like amulets, don't be ridiculous.
We gotta draw
those
the
are
lines.
A farce.
Yeah,
you know, that's one step too far.
We gotta draw the line somewhere.
There's never like rituals or anything either in Harry Potter.
Oh sure,
you know, I always like really appreciate. That's always like a thing. Whenever I'm watching like a fantasy show, and it's always like, oh yes, we have to do a ritual and sit in a circle and do a thing. I'm always like, this is you've lost me. I don't buy it.
It's it's very interesting as well, because I feel like when I was first presented with this story overall, and like the idea of like witches and wizards and stuff, that was almost almost immediately what came to mind.
Right.
Like it was almost like the like Philosopher's Stone, the first book read through. Like its chief mission was to prove to me that it wasn't going to be that.
Right.
Because that was something where I was like, I don't know if I'm gonna like that as much. And then obviously it ends up not really being
it's not in there.
Super relevant. You've said it a couple of times with total confidence. Mm-hmm. Ouagadougou.
Ouagadougou.
Okay.
Yeah.
Real place.
Ouagadougou is a real place, and actually the reason I'm pronouncing it correctly is because I looked it up because I thought perhaps he was referencing was Ouagadougou, which is the wizarding school of Uganda.
Okay.
But he is not. And then Ouagadougou, what he is talking about is just another place in Africa. They sound similar, but they are not actually the same place at all. Although this is just also, as I was looking up Ouagadougou, I just read the little article about it. Apparently, they do a lot of wandless magic there. That's like their big thing.
Okay.
And then also the way they are told they're coming to the school is by like dreams, like visitors or something. Like in their sleep, they are visited in their dream and told that they are allowed to come to the school. And then they wake up with like a token in their hand or something.
Whoa!
I was like, whoa, I have not heard about this kind of magic before. So that was wild to me.
That is super, super wild. Okay, that's very... That was the exact reason I also highlighted that. I was like, is this a reference to the African school of magic? And so it sounds like, while they maybe sound similar, they are not necessarily connected.
They're not.
Okay. Sounds good. But yeah, so then from there, we get the clarification from Dumbledore basically saying that she is not dead, Argus. And Lockhart immediately, he says, she has been petrified, said Dumbledore. Ah, I thought so, said Lockhart.
But it's like, dude, one sentence ago you said she was dead and that you knew the curse, and it's so unlucky you weren't there.
I know. I literally wrote next to it, how do they not punch him?
I know.
Like, it's got to be, because inside of this situation, like, this is one of those things where it's like, I mean, as teachers who must all realize that he doesn't actually know what he's talking about all of the time, it must be so incredibly frustrating, because this is an actual high stress situation where he's just blurting random crap out.
Yes.
You know, and it, like, I think if it was me, it'd be like, dude, we are trying to do something over here. Can you just go like play with blocks in the corner or something? Like, I don't know. Like, there must be somewhere else he can go. Like, it has got to be so distracting to what is otherwise like a very high stress situation for the rest of the people involved.
Yes, it is. I don't know. Yeah, it's like, please just go stand over there. Can you go get me something? You know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I have a very important task for you, Gilderoy. Why don't you go untangle these earbuds?
They've been thrown on a desk more than five times. It'll keep it busy.
Yeah.
There you go. But yeah, so then Filch basically is absolutely certain that Harry did it. And he basically, this is the part that I think I was referencing in last week's chapter, but he says, he knows I'm a squib, he finished. And so this is, I think, the piece that always sort of stands in our way a little bit in our Filch as a poltergeist concept.
Uh-huh.
Because he himself identifies as a squib.
Yeah.
Which is like kind of,
because he's fully non-magical.
Yeah. So it's kind of odd, but then I also thought this was kind of funny. A couple of pages later, he's attempting to erase the writing from the wall, which I believe is written in blood, is it not?
I think so.
Okay. Well, because I think that he's using some type of like special like potion that is supposed to be taking it off to like little to no effect. And then I was like, you know, this is kind of curious, because we were talking last chapter about how Filch still had the flu, and like everybody else who was sick was like, you know, being healed with the pepper up potion to great effect. But this would be like yet another instance where Filch is attempting to use a magical product and unable to successfully do anything with it, when all that's written on the wall is just blood. Like, it should come off, right?
You would think, yeah. Like, do they eventually get it off, or is it there the whole time they're at Hogwarts?
I don't know. This is the type of thing where it's like, guys, you gotta put like a curtain over it or something.
I know, right?
Cover it with a cloth.
Right. do something there.
It's not safe for the students to just keep walking by that. Anyway, but yeah, so his insecurity about being non-magical is definitely coming out, and he is certain that Harry would have done this simply because he saw the Quickspell letter, which, as a reminder, again, is not really a course for squibs.
Right.
It's more for people trying to like brush up on their actual like magical abilities.
Right.
So it's kind of like one of those things like, what do you think the quick spell is going to do?
Yeah, nothing. Yeah. You can't do magic. It's not a matter of understanding.
Right.
So there's that. And then Snape comes in with his interrogations where he seems to be coming to their defense at first. Potter and his friends may have simply been in the wrong place at the wrong time, which I always read. I'm like, I don't even feel like Snape would say that. But then he asks, like, why was he in the upstairs corridor at all? Why wasn't he at the Halloween feast? And it's like, to me, I think this is like almost a silly question. Like, they weren't standing outside of a bathroom, you know?
Oh, like, sure. Yeah. Like, yeah. Where
maybe they just went to the bathroom. Is there a bathroom off the Great Hall that I don't know? We don't know.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. No, I mean, that I think that totally makes sense. Yep. It's also like one of those things where it's like, is it bad to skip a feast? Could you not just do that?
I know. Certainly, every single student was in there right then.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. And then there's this like big like hinge. The whole story could have gone a whole different way right here. It seems like maybe this was like we talked about in the comments or in the review last week from one of the questions. But it's they ask Harry like, why go up to that corridor? And Harry says something told him it would sound very far-fetched if he told them he'd been led there by a bodiless voice no one but him could hear. And it's like, actually, that would have been super helpful information. Like, if you had just spoken up right here, the whole plot goes a different way. This is like one of those situations where it's like, I need to have Harry not just go ahead and give them all the information because we could pretty much solve it right away.
I know.
Yeah.
This is like one of those moments too, though, where it's like you can't tell if Snape is almost as bad as Filch, where he's just got like his own, or not Filch rather, but as Lockhart, but where he's just kind of like got his own agenda inside of the situation. Because Harry just like ends that with like, because we were tired and we wanted to go to bed, he said. And Snape kind of has this like without any supper with like a triumphant smile flickering across his gaunt face. Like, this is one of those moments where it's like Snape can read his mind.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like he knows he's lying, but like the thing that he's lying about, it's like, oh, wait a second, that's pretty serious. But instead it seems like this really weird situation where like Snape is sort of like, I'm pretty sure we should kick him off the Gryffindor Quidditch team. That would do the trick, wouldn't it? And it's like,
right. It's like he becomes really petty at the end.
Yeah, it's like, and like, you know, even McGonagall sort of like responds with like, really, Severus? I see no reason to stop the boy from playing Quidditch. The cat wasn't and hit over the head with a broomstick. You know, and it is sort of like, it's like, what is Snape doing in this situation? Like, because especially in the long term, it's like, you know that Snape is just a good guy anyway. And
yeah.
So it's like, if he had just read Harry's mind in that situation, it's like, oh man, okay. There's some heavy stuff going on in there. Okay.
Meanwhile, it seems like Dumbledore is doing exactly that. It says Dumbledore is giving Harry a searching look. His twinkling light blue gaze made Harry feel as though he was being x-rayed. And it's like, is he reading his mind? Is he like, oh, Harry can hear things in the wall. That's interesting.
Yeah, that's like one of those where, so to your exact point, that's like, this becomes like a Dumbledore's big plan type of question.
Right.
Where it's like, all of a sudden, Dumbledore most likely does have some more vital information to go off of. And like, he has such a big picture in his mind for like what Harry is doing and where Harry is supposed to be and like how he's supposed to be like learning all this type of stuff. So it that would sort of suggest that it's like, it's almost like going back to the going through the trap door in book one, where it's like, you know, Harry says, I think that Dumbledore thought that I should, you know, have a chance to go after it if I wanted to.
Right.
This is almost one where it's kind of like, okay, Dumbledore kind of knows.
Right.
Something's
like,
up.
Yeah, like Harry can hear the voice.
Right.
Right.
Yes.
But doesn't he say later that he like, he does think it's like, the question is not, because I think when Lucius Malfoy comes in, he says something along the lines of like, oh, it's the same person who did it last time. The question is how or something. Like, so maybe he already thinks it's Voldemort in some way. Does he say that?
I do think he does. I feel like I, at the very least, remember that from the film. It's a good question to know if he actually says it in the book.
Right. I guess we'll get to it at some point.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to circle back on that one. It's a good question, though. Something to look out for.
But then, sure enough, a page later, like Harry confirms like that he shouldn't have said anything with Ron. Do you think I should have told him I heard the voice in my head? And says, no, hearing voices no one else can hear isn't a good sign. Even in the wizarding world, it's like, yeah, okay, Ron. Like, I'm just like, this is like, it's like that throwaway sentence that like stops them from getting help from the adults. But it's also like, oh yeah, no, that oh, you guys heard a voice that was saying it's going to kill somebody, and then you found a nearly dead cat at like the scene of a crime. Like, yeah, that probably wasn't important or related at all. Like,
this phrasing is almost like a magic trick, because it's like, it says like, no, said Ron without hesitation, like hearing voices, you know, like that's not a good sign. But like, change the word from no to yes, and it makes the sentence make even more sense. It's like, do you think I should have told them about the voice I heard? Yes, said Ron without hesitation. Hearing voices no one else can hear isn't a good sign, even in the wizarding world.
Right.
It's like, doesn't that like immediately make way more sense? It's like, yeah, Harry, that's pretty serious, man. Like, this would be like, you know, not feeling well, taking your temperature and realizing you have 105 degree fever.
Right.
You know, and it's like, do you think I should tell anybody? It's like, no, that's pretty severe, even for humans.
It's right.
Like, it's like, okay, good call. I won't call the ambulance.
I won't tell anyone. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to like alarm them or something.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, but you're exactly right. I mean, this is the moment in the story where like what is happening is the story is a lot less interesting if adults are simply able to help. So Harry needs to be able to figure it out.
Right. This is like the sentence where the burden is now put on Harry, Ron, and Hermione instead of the adults.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Yep. So either which way, then we move on down, and
Ron explains what a squib is.
Yes, yes. Which, you know, it's even his delivery is kind of interesting. He says, well, it's not funny, really, but has its filch. I suppose someone who was born with the wizarding family, but hasn't got any magic powers. I actually do sort of appreciate this, but like, because, you know, I feel like Ron is like, filch is kind of like a pain himself, you know,
right.
Like in general, like this is not really something you like make fun of, like, you
right.
know, which I think is good for House Weasley a little bit, because I do feel like once again, this is an instance where like, you know, Arthur and Molly will have like ingrained into their children. Like, it's like, this is not something to like, you know, be hard on somebody about
right.
or something, you know, it's like,
isn't there someone in the wizarding family like, oh, he's an accountant. We don't really talk about him.
I do think there is a line. Yeah. That's something like that.
Somewhere there. Yep. But he also gives us another qualification. Well, I mean, he says born into a wizarding family, which just made me think like, well, do we know anything about Filch's family? It's like, nope, not that I'm aware of.
No, none whatsoever.
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe he's still not squibbing it. All poltergeists all the time. Actually, and then speaking to Filch, though, the next page, they sort of talk about the day or there's the what happens in the aftermath. And Filch is like staking out the scene of the crime as though he thought the attacker might come back. And it was like, I just highlighted that. It's like, that's probably actually pretty effective.
Right. Yeah.
Like, because it's like, that is where the entrance is, and like nothing happens while he's doing it. So,
right. Yep.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Like,
that's a good point.
Yep.
Yeah. Here we go. This is what he's been doing, though. Harry had seen him scrubbing the message on the wall with Mrs. Scour's all purpose magical mess remover, but to no effect. The word still gleamed as brightly as ever on the stone.
Yeah. It does seem like that probably should work. Like, what could Ginny have done to make it like so permanent?
I know. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
I don't know either. Because do they ever get it off?
Also a good question.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, surely at some point, this feels like another one of those like the Weasley twins swamp, the portable swamp,
right.
And like Flitwick can like get rid of it with like a flick of his wand. Although it does seem odd that they wouldn't just do that.
Yeah, anyway. Like when they do it right away.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Don't let the students continue to be like, you know, horrified by it.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then the next thing we get is a bit more of that lean where like once you know the full story, everything makes a bit more sense. But like Ginny Weasley seemed very disturbed by Mrs. Norris's fate. According to Ron, she was a great cat lover.
Yeah.
And it's like it's a very light way to sort of be like, you know, oh yeah, no, it's she just likes cats. So like that's what it would be.
I mean, every time there's like here's everything that's happening in the castle now. It'll always mention Ginny. And it'll always like actually throw shade at her, but appear to do the exact opposite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Exactly. So even in the last chapter, I think it was like the flu. It's like Ginny Weasley was looking pale lately, but probably the flu that's going around.
Right. Because everyone else has it. And it's like, not the flu.
So it's funny how it's like you keep noticing that something's wrong with Ginny. And maybe that was like the big thing is that it'd be like, why would nobody notice that Ginny was having like a super rough year? And it's like, oh no, they were noticing. They just kept thinking, they kept dismissing it for something
else. They
kept
dismissing it. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
I love that Ron tells her like stuff like this doesn't often happen at Hogwarts, and I was just like, yes, it does.
just like only like every single
just
year.
Like every year you've been there, basically, you know, whatever.
Right.
No big deal. Last year at about this time, you had just fought off a mountain troll, had you not?
Right.
In a bathroom, nonetheless. What is it with the bathrooms?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Big place for action there at Hogwarts.
Yep.
Moving on to the next page, I thought this was just sort of kind of like interesting, but they're talking a little bit about like the homework that they're doing, which is a like a something for Professor Binns, the Medieval Assembly of European Wizards. I always think it's interesting that they describe the assignments as like length of scroll, or parchment. So a 3-foot long composition is what they've been writing. And then Ron says, "I'm still 8 inches short," said Ron furiously, letting go of his parchment, which sprang back into a roll. And it says that Hermione's already done 4 feet, 7 inches. And then on the very next page, though, it's like he asks Hermione for help. And she says, "No, I won't," said Hermione severely. "You've had 10 days to finish it. I only need another 2 inches. Come on."
No, it's like what? Dude, you've only said 3 sentences. You filled up 6 inches.
Or is this just Ron lying? Oh. Like, you know, like what is the interpretation of what's going on there? Is he like, he's like, "Oh, I'm 8 inches short. If I could just read Hermione's, I'll be able to get the rest of it." So it's like, I only need 2 inches.
Yeah. Maybe.
Some real Lockhart.
I'm imagining him doing some sort of Photoshop magic where he's like drawn like a big box around his text and he's like, "Stretch," or something.
Right. No, it reminds me of when I was in high school and college. I think one of the things that I would do is like, you would go through and do the find all of the periods.
You could
enlarge every single like period from like size 12 point font to like size 13 point font.
Right.
And it would add like an extra like millimeter to like every single time there was a period.
And like you get maybe one or two extra lines there to get to the bottom of those 5 pages.
That's so nice.
Or if you could, the other one was you could use the font Courier New, which was much wider text. That would make every single letter bigger.
And I don't know, maybe your class pioneered this, then mine followed through, because I feel like it was always Times New Roman. That was like the requirement.
Oh, maybe. Sometimes they would say it had to, and sometimes they didn't, and it would be like, oh, if you didn't say it, then no big deal, right?
No big deal.
Or if you do it, change the line spacing from to 1.1 inches or something instead of like 1 inch. No one wanted to write 5 pages.
Never. I want to know to any teachers out there whether or not they're like just always on the look for these particular tricks.
Yeah.
You know, because it feels like the type of thing where I feel like the teacher could be like, I know exactly what you did to get 5 pages. So what would have been like a 94, it's like, it's a 93 now.
Right, yeah. You know? Maybe I found another out of place comma. That was the other worst thing is if you got you had a 5-page paper and all of the information was great, but you just lost points for like grammar things. And it was like, but is that really what? Okay.
Yeah. Oh no, I know what you mean exactly. Yeah. It's like the content I wrote was pretty good. Right. Though,
I clearly had a grasp of the material.
Right. I passed grammar in a different class altogether, but this isn't grammar.
I know.
Anyway.
Jeez.
This is it.
Now we're going to go off topic.
A total aside rant. So then we move on, though, to Professor Binns' class, which we could basically get a description of as being just like the most remarkably boring thing ever.
Yes.
An interesting thing that happens here is that Hermione raises her hand, which is not the unusual bit, but it's instead to answer a question. It is to ask a question.
I know.
Which I
in
think
Professor
is
Binns'
of,
class.
In Professor Binns, who apparently nobody has like ever raised a hand before.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, something that had never happened before is what they describe it as. This is another one of those where it's like maybe Professor Binns can't learn that much because he gets everybody's name wrong for the next page. Hermione immediately says, like, he says, "Miss and she says, "Granger, Professor." And then like 2 sentences later, he says, "Miss Grant." And so it's like clearly he's like not picking up on new information very well.
I think what's also interesting, even before they get to class, is that Hermione is going to the library to try and check out a copy of Hogwarts of History. Is that what it is?
Yep.
Yeah. And
you know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
They ask her why. She's like, I want to read up on the Chamber of Secrets. And Harry's like, what's that? And he says, that's just it. I can't remember, said Hermione. And I'm just like, oh, as if. No, what sense? That's the really out of character thing here. Like, you don't remember something in Hogwarts of history?
Right.
Excuse me? Who are you?
It's her comfort read.
Who is actually under Polyjuice here, right? Who's pretending to be Hermione?
Right, right.
Gosh.
It's probably Draco.
Probably, exactly.
Or Ludo Bagman.
Yeah. Also, just this, like, as a random thing, is that because they're writing an essay for Professor Binns, right?
Yes.
Yes. So, like, he is a ghost. So, like, how is he, like, I don't know, collecting the papers or grading them or anything like that? Like, he can't move them.
Even in the last chapter, we know that Nearly Headless Nick's letter from what's his bucket, the other sir.
Yeah, so Delaney, properly decapitated Podmore.
Yes, the one. It's a translucent letter,
right?
So it's a ghost letter as well. And so you're right, though. It's like, how
on earth? Yeah, how are they writing letters as ghosts?
I have no idea.
Doesn't make sense to me.
Make any sense. Yeah, but somehow, some way, he must do it.
He does. And then I just love this sentence from, again, him, a ghost, where he says, "I deal with facts, Miss Granger, not myths and legends." Like, he's not just floating there in midair as a as a magical being. And I'm like, "What, dude? Okay." And then again, this is like the question of, like, he says that as if another member of staff wasn't, like, factually expelled for opening the Chamber of Secrets. It's like, well, you know about that. You could tell, I mean, maybe you don't want to just, like, out Hagrid or something, but
I suppose there's something to that. Like, just because a student asked in class, they probably would be like, well, you know, Hagrid, the guy who works here, he technically was expelled for, doing this exam.
Throw him right under the bus.
Yeah. That would be pretty unprofessional.
Yes, like, it would.
I don't suspect that another teacher would reveal that to a student based on just a single question in class in front of other students. So I guess that's fair, but it still doesn't read as if Binns has any idea that the Chamber of Secrets has ever even perceptibly been opened.
Yeah.
You know, like it seems like basically he's just like, this is a bunch of phooey.
Yeah.
It's not a thing.
Not a thing. Not a thing at all. Yeah. But then he gets into the story about the Hogwarts founders, which, of course, we are endlessly fascinated with.
Yes, we are.
But he said, I'm always interested by this. It says, you all know, of course, that Hogwarts was founded over 1,000 years ago. The precise date is uncertain. It's like, why? Why is the date uncertain? That is, like, that's its own mystery to me. Like, there's no reason the date, the founding of the school, should not be known.
Yeah, I mean, this is like, I've kind of gone back to the same sentiment a few times before, which is just that, like, I feel like Hogwarts wasn't originally, like, Hogwarts was originally closer to what Hogsmeade currently is. Like, it was just a safe haven for witches and wizards to go. So, like, I wonder if it's, like, one of these things where it's like they constructed a safe haven somewhere deep in the mountains of Scotland, potentially out of a dragon.
Potentially. Hogwarts is a dragon.
Yeah.
We all know it's true.
to that one person who doubted us. no, but I think that, like, this is, like, one of those things where it's like I could easily see a world where if you know, witches and wizards alike were flocking to this particular location, and they were like, you know, while we're here, we should start teaching. And then it's like you start to like formalize like a curriculum and all the rest. And at some point in time, it's like maybe we should teach like our youngins as they grow up, and mm-hmm. like, then they'll be like fully trained witches and wizards and such. So like I almost wonder if it's like if it was like a moving target where it's like for a while the school wasn't
like the structure existed for a while. And like they were then like, but not necessarily as a school to start, but eventually, whilst it was a structure, they began teaching people because it was a safe haven.
Yes.
And then eventually they're like, why don't we make this a bit more formal?
Yes. And at which point in time, like like the founding of Hogsmeade would take place and people would be like, okay, I think we're pretty safe out here where we are. Like we're not going to, you know, run into people by mistake. So I think we can set up like a safe community of wizard only people, you know, over here mm-hmm, next to mm-hmm. the castle. And at which point in time, then the school just becomes a school.
Okay. I can see that as a more reasonable explanation. What I would want to know is if there's any like unreasonable explanations.
Oh.
As in like, is there a reason to keep the date a mystery like on purpose or something, you know? Like, does this avoid some sort of like time turner shenanigans about the founding of the school or... You know,
oh,
like, right.
That's so interesting. Yeah, that's a good thought. That's definitely a good thought. There is something crucial that has to happen in order for Hogwarts to continue to be Hogwarts. And if people know when it is, they could attempt to time travel back to it and disrupt like a very vital moment.
Right, right. Which, of course, according to our own time turn rules, wouldn't make a difference because that would have always happened as well.
That's true.
But yeah. Would there be a reason like magically to obscure the date?
I mean, we've also said that like, you know, magic in itself is kind of chaotic and like sloppy mm-hmm. and not necessarily like neat and organized. So that could be the other thing too, is that it's just sort of like, oh yeah, like it sort of was like a place we were like sort of learning. And then like eventually it became like more formal learning and, you know, now it is what it is.
Yeah, we have like a sorting hat and stuff. But what makes me think there's something fishy about it is just later in the page where... he says Slytherin left the school, and he says reliable historical sources tell us this much. And it's like, it sounds like the school was only open for a few years. It says for a few years, the founders worked in harmony. And then later reliable historical sources tell us that Slytherin left. So it's like, there's like only like whatever those reliable historical sources are, like, we don't know, but like, just that they're classified as reliable sounds like you would know the dates of them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, and if it's like, if you know the dates of said reliable historical sources, and like if it was only for a few years, then there's got to be like a, I don't know, how big do you still use the word few for? Like less than 10, you know? Like it seems like we get inside the decade.
Right. No, I see your meaning. And it's like a few is kind of like one of those strange words where I feel like for the longest time, I mean, and it seems ridiculous. Like a couple makes sense. Like couple equals two, like a few equals three.
More than a couple.
Well, more than a couple.
But less than several.
I tend to think a few as three and then like some as like four or more.
Right. So you have couple, few, some, several.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, actually, there's a funny thing on Survivor right now where this guy like fails to do a puzzle and everyone's like, I thought we had several. It's like, it said we had several hours. I thought that meant seven. And everyone's like, why did you think that? And he's like, several means seven. And he's like, everyone's like, several does not mean seven. And he's just like, yes, it does. And everyone's like the whole cast, even Jeff is like, it does not mean seven.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Yeah, it is like, really funny.
Like that's like the moment where if it was me and I was the one hosting that thing, I would be like, several doesn't mean seven, does it?
Right.
I would like question myself inside of that minute, like immediately.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so the school was founded. Supposedly, Slytherin had a hidden chamber in the castle of which the founders knew nothing. This is like another one of those like where I feel like we've delved into the idea of the Chamber of Secrets before as like what good reason might Salazar have had for constructing such a location?
Right.
You know, it's like, is there some possibility that it was like meant to be like a, you know, like a bunker in case of like emergency, like,
sure,
like a highly hidden place, like where they could, you know, tunnel down to and be safe in the event of like an invasion or something like that? Because that doesn't seem totally dissimilar from other like known civilization safe havens.
It also seems like it seems unlikely to me that whilst Slytherin had command over the basilisk, that like it was as a small basilisk. Like in my mind, he like the basilisk was also large then. Right, like he was dealing with a fully grown basilisk.
Yes, I mean that would be my thought.
That would be my thought. I mean, it seems to me that all I'm trying to get at is that like I've always been under the impression that like he's had the basilisk for a long time, even when he knew the other three.
Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So like, it seems to me that they would know he had a basilisk because he can't really hide it.
Right.
And it seems The reason you would then build the chamber is so that, like, you could put the basilisk somewhere. Like, I can't get rid of it. Like, it's my big pet. It's my big pet boy. But, like, clearly I understand it's a danger. So let me build a very impossible to access place for it to live.
Right.
It's a safety precaution.
It's a safety precaution.
But we all love old Bassie.
I know, yeah. It's like the world where the basilisk is actually like a kind of like endearing character is so hard to wrap your head around, but sort of also amazing.
In my headcanon is that all four of them love the basilisk.
It was like their Labrador.
Exactly. It's just like, yeah, they're all like, man, yeah, great. Like we're not going to make you get rid of it. So of course, if you don't know, our theory about this particular thing is that the reason no one knows what the monster is or where it is or how to access it is because all of that information is kept locked inside of Slytherin's locket.
Yes. And that's like the key reason as to like why that would be his artifact. Like, whereas everybody else's artifacts are so relevant to like sort of like their skills or ability, like the Diadem of Ravenclaw could like supposedly make you smarter if you put it on, and like Hufflepuff's cup can supposedly turn like water into wine, and the Sword of Gryffindor is supposed to represent like Gryffindor's sort of like
chivalrousness.
Yes, like the willingness to like, you know, duel with like a Muggle person with a sword versus like dueling with like a wizard with a wand and that type of thing. So
a magic sword
forged by goblins, but you know.
Who's keeping track? Right, it's a fair fight.
They don't know it's a goblin-made sword. Right. It's fine. What additional abilities that grants it? Who knows? But so the thought there would be that like the major thing that we know that Slytherin had at the school was the Chamber of Secrets, and then the locket is sort of like it's kind of fascinating because it is oftentimes lockets are used to like hold information about loved ones, which is also kind of an interesting thing because in order to have an heir, Slytherin would need to have
a loved one, right?
Presumably,
yes.
Right?
You know, right.
Or even just offspring who could be the loved one themselves.
Exactly.
You know, all of which, like, you know, if the belief is that Slytherin's heir was supposed to be able to like enter the Chamber of Secrets, like maybe it is supposed to be like this is a locket that will be passed down to,
which we know does happen. That's what the Gaunts have. It is passed down.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Yes. So it's effective.
Right.
So like and you know, maybe
and the like we only know about Tom Riddle opening the Chamber of Secrets 50 years ago, but like canonically the Gaunt family has opened it over the years as well, never to unleash the basilisk, but they have like found it, they have entered it.
Is it like for plumbing
they
reasons?
Do like update the plumbing? Yeah, yes, this is like one of those like, oh, there wasn't indoor plumbing back then, they added plumbing. The Gaunts, they did it.
Hooray. And that's the funny one because it means that like the little snake on the pipe that like signifies like, hey, this is like a snaky place here inside of this girl's bathroom, it's like that means like one of the members of like the Gaunt family likely inscribed that snake in
practically
that location.
Gave it away.
Yeah, like otherwise Salazar was like, dude, I had it so well hidden, what the heck, y'all?
What the heck,
it's like leaving a little breadcrumb for someone.
I know,
to
but
find.
That means that he didn't leave the snake there, which means they must have found it somehow, and the one thing they have from him is the locket.
Yep.
So it seems to me that prior to becoming a Horcrux, the locket is like a Fidelius charm for information about the chamber, which is why no one can. It's like if Voldemort walked past Godric's Hollow, like he wouldn't be able to see the Potter's house.
Yeah,
you know, it's like the same thing, but with the chamber. It's like I in my mind, they all used to know it existed for the purpose of housing the basilisk.
Sure,
and it's like now they're like, we know. He made a something, and there was something in it.
what? What was it?
Like, yeah, but now that information is like locked off because it's in the locket. So,
well, we even know in Deathly Hallows as well that like before Ron destroys the locket with the Sword of Gryffindor, like Harry actually uses Parseltongue to open.
Right. It's the same way. Yeah. You open it the same way.
Right. Yeah. So it's like that. That's the other thing too. You could always ensure that only your heir would be the one who would be accessing the locket because the only way to open the locket is through Parseltongue.
And if you're thinking, oh, well then how on earth could Harry have done it? And the answer is because Harry has a piece of Voldemort in him and is effectively acting as the heir when he opens it as well. So it still works.
It still works. It so all still works.
It all still works. Yeah. No, yeah. Anyway, there you go. That's our theory for the locket and what it actually did.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So anyway, but then, yeah, so I feel like I do think that this entire exchange with Professor Binns is kind of interesting because for someone who is so boring, he's telling a pretty fascinating story or backstory to
it's like
the,
he can be interesting.
He can be interesting. Yes. By sort of, like explaining everything that he knows about the Legend of the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, goodness. And, but not just reading from his notes, which, again, how on earth do you have notes?
Right.
As a ghost. Anyway. Let's see. So upon hearing this, Ron laments about how Salazar Slytherin was a twisted old loony, as far as he knows. Psh, enter Carlin Brothers.
Ha,
but that he's the one who apparently started all of like the pure blood mania. And then Harry remembers that he was almost sorted into Slytherin, whereas Ron and Hermione are like, oh, boy, I'd leave.
Yes, yes, yeah. I know. Yeah, this is definitely one of those things where you could almost imagine in like a social setting, especially where your two best friends are saying like their sort of distaste for it. You could imagine how this would all of a sudden be something he would keep very close to his chest.
Yeah.
Like if they seem a little bit judgmental about this type of thing, like maybe I don't want to let them know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could imagine going back to like my middle school self and having occasions where somebody would say like, oh, that's not cool. And it's like, I will definitely remember to never tell you I enjoy that thing.
Exactly. Let me go ahead and just slice off that part of my personality or at least hide it from you for the next 10 years. And then I'll start a YouTube channel and make it cool to like that thing. Okay, cool. Fine.
Story of my life.
Story of my life.
Yep.
Anyway, so then Harry, Ron, and Hermione just stumble upon the crime scene, which is no longer being guarded by Filch, and just decide, you know what? It can't hurt to have a poke around, which is, I mean, that's literally what Harry says. And then I forgot this line. It says, getting to his hands and knees so that he could crawl along searching for clues. Like, he's immediately like, I'm going to go ahead and solve this.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The thing that I was trying to remember, so I highlighted this, because right after crawling on his hands and knees, he says, scorch marks, he said, here and here.
Dude, I highlighted the exact same thing. I'm like, what are the scorch marks?
I know, that was my exact thought. I was like, leftover from that time you transported Norbert?
Yeah, I know. Like does the basilisk's stare also like burn stuff?
Right, yeah. There's nothing in my mind that a basilisk connects to flames in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And I would associate scorch marks with flames. So that's kind of like something else happened in this hallway.
I know. What are the scorch marks for? I don't, that's not explained.
Yep.
Yeah. So there is I'm glad you noticed that because I did too. Let's see. And then I thought it's interesting where like Hermione then immediately notices the spiders as well. Around 20 spiders were scuttling, apparently fighting to get through a small crack, which like it's how many days has it been since the attack happened? And it's like there are still spiders getting away. Like you don't think they all would have gone immediately? And like also, wouldn't this be happening everywhere in the castle, like not just from this particular spot?
You would almost think at this point in time, you would almost even just in general, I think, believe that spiders would just not be present in the castle at all.
Yeah.
Because the basilisk is always there. And if they are able to detect its presence in this capacity, you would think that it would just
That's true too.
Like it would just be like a kind of like strange fact about the castle. It's like for some reason spiders don't like it here.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that
that feels like Newt while he was at school would be like, that's interesting.
Yeah, like Newt would notice there's no spiders here.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like, what's up with that?
I know. I guess I guess it could have been like in hibernation or something for like 1,000 years? I don't know.
I mean, that's the other thing, too, is that, like, yeah, what is the monster doing down there? What is the basilisk doing every single day of its life? Because it's just got to be so bored.
Yeah, so like, bored. I guess eating rats and stuff, but
yep.
That's got to be so many rats. There's probably no rats at the castle either.
That's right, yeah. It's, like, oddly pest-free.
Oddly pest-free.
We are not sure why.
Scabbers is real lucky that he doesn't just get chomped by...
That's true.
By old Bassy.
Which would have made a huge difference to the overall story.
What if the basilisk ate Scabbers?
just plain cool.
Yeah. The hero. Indeed. I'm so for a world where the Basilisk gets rebranded.
I know. Yeah, I think it'd be very interesting. To see. Like, I mean, because that's the thing, too. It's like, yeah, we just talked about it, like the Chamber of Secrets being a safe haven. But then that's the thing, is that like the Basilisk was meant to be like a line of defense.
Yeah, like if it was meant as like a way to help protect the school.
Right.
Yeah,
right,
from like, you know, vicious muggles or something. Which even Professor Binns even says, what does he say back here? This was a time when magic was feared by common people and witches and wizards suffered much persecution. So it would seem like, yeah, we don't want to use the Basilisk, but like we do have it here. We have like a last resort or something.
Just in case. So there's that. We get a little bit of the backstory from Ron, basically describing why he's afraid of spiders. And it says, if you must know, when I was three, Fred turned my teddy bear into a great filthy spider. And that's like one of those where it's like, Fred would have been quite young at that point in time too. So this must have been like one of those like pieces of magic that happened, like by mistake.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, because he would have been five.
Right. Yeah. So it's like it's not like Fred was like a fully trained wizard at that point in time, like casting spells and such with the wand.
Or else he's doing really great magic, wandless magic.
Wandless
transfiguring
magic,
teddy bears into spiders.
Seems like something you would actually do in McGonagall's class.
It does, yeah. It does seem like that. So good for Fred. Maybe he's like secretly great at transfiguration. Let's see. Then they also, in addition to the scorch marks, they like, remember the water on the floor? Where did that come from? Someone's mopped it up. And it's like, did they solve that either? Like, where did the water come from? Like, I guess because the Basilisk comes out of the bathroom.
Yeah. This, right? I mean, like, I feel like eventually Hermione has like the little note in her hand that says like pipes. And so it's like, you basically are led to believe that like the way that the Basilisk is able to like move through the castle is basically because it can just like travel through the plumbing and stuff like that. But like, this is another one of those like where when the movie came out, I was like, wow, that thing is a lot bigger than I was expecting it to be.
Right.
Like, because the Basilisk in the movie is freaking gigantic.
It is massive. Like, yeah. Because I remember back when we were reading, you know, Chamber of Secrets as kids or whatever, like one of the games I was playing was like Final Fantasy, and like a Basilisk is an enemy you can fight in there, and it's like, I mean, it's a big snake, but it's only like as tall as people, not like several stories tall.
Right. Yeah. And if you're unfamiliar with like common household plumbing and stuff, like your typical pipes are like 3/4 inch to 1 inch pipes, maybe a 2 inch drain.
Right.
But like you're not big enough for like a Godzilla sized monster to be like traveling through.
Right. I mean, yeah. I guess, I don't know. Snakes can probably squeeze through small things. This is a big snake.
It's a big snake.
Yeah. And it's like, so where did the water come from? It's like, I guess like it came out, but it's like the Basilisk, like you would think it could just pop up anywhere in the school, but clearly it came out of the actual entrance on this particular occasion.
Sure.
Right? So it's like, is it wet? Did it like break a pipe or something? And like, because if it's, or is it just, where did the water come from? Because otherwise it seems like every time it emerges, there should be a puddle of water. And if it, or if it's always emerging from this same bathroom, there should continue to be a puddle every time there's a attack.
In my head, there is always water there, but maybe that's just inaccurate. I'm not sure.
Okay, well, yeah, we'll keep an eye out.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that. Yep. But yeah, so then we basically go into said bathroom. We get more of like our first exchange with Moaning Myrtle, who is just basically talking about how like difficult life had been and like why she had, you know, ended up in the bathroom in the first place. You know, she says, my life was nothing but misery and at this place, and now people come along ruining my death. And so my original note was like, why would you come back as a ghost to this particular place? But I forgot that it's basically because she intended to haunt the person who was tormenting her.
Olive Hornby.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So. Hilarious. Although it also, the description of the bathroom is interesting to me. It says, under a large cracked and spotted mirror were rows of chipped sinks. And it's like, how can the bathroom be out of order? Like, can't they just like reparo anything?
Yeah, that's the other thing that I was kind of struggling with. Like, you know, they sort of say like nobody likes to come into this bathroom because like this is where Moaning Myrtle is. But like, is it the case that people literally don't go to this bathroom at all?
Yeah, like at just like it's, you know, because Hermione mentioned in the last chapter that it's difficult to like go use the bathroom while Myrtle is like there. But like clearly she has done it because she has experience with Myrtle. So like it's sometimes working.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, I can understand why it's out of order like right now because it's like the crime scene. But like Why is everything chipped and stuff? It seems like that's easy to repair.
Maybe it's from the troll attack last year.
Oh, you think it's the same bathroom?
Well, I have no idea. I was like, you know, the troll definitely smashed in some sinks and stuff.
Well, that's true. That did happen.
Chip sinks.
Chip sinks.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, I guess that would... Would that be the right... I don't know. Is it the same bathroom? That'd be funny.
That would be funny, yeah.
But then where was Myrtle? She's just like, yo, time to go.
I'm going to not be here for this.
Yeah. Yeah, let's see. Anyway, so they talk to Myrtle, and then she dives into one of the U-bends and splashes water all over the place, which is just, like, interesting to note that ghosts, like, can interact with water.
They can displace water,
They can displace water, yeah.
Yep.
And hold ghost paper.
And hold ghost paper. Yep. That's the one. But so then they're exiting the bathroom where they are then stopped by Percy Weasley. And this is another one of those moments where it's sort of like, it doesn't really like allude in any way, shape or form that like Percy is behaving in an unusual way. But it's another situation where like he happens to be spotted like at the scene of the crime.
Right.
So once again, this is supposed to be sort of like a red herring situation. And Percy gets all mad at Ron and he's like, you should not be in there. That is a girl's bathroom. Like, what are you thinking? And he then takes 5 points from Gryffindor.
Yes.
Which is immediately one of those things where, like, while I was just reading it in real time, I was like, can he do this? Because I really wanted to go back and fact check. Because I know later on in the story, Malfoy is taking points from, I think, like, Harry and Ernie McMillan or something.
Yeah.
And they're like, you can't do that. And he's like, I can because I'm a member of the Inquisitorial Squad. And
right.
It seems like the clarification is inside of that moment. It's not that you can't take points from other students, you just can't take points from other prefects is I think what is specifically written.
Oh, really?
Yes, inside of that situation. So it seems like you actually can, a prefix can deduct points.
I think because of what Percy does here, they can. That's interesting that they couldn't do it, or but like he takes them from Harry too, right?
Like who? Malfoy?
Yeah.
It's a good question. I know that Ernie was the one I think who retaliates and is sort of like, you can't take points from other prefects. And like that's when like he points like his shiny new Inquisitorial Squad badge.
Interesting. Okay, my interpretation there has always been that like it doesn't seem right that the prefects would be able to like award or dock points because they could so easily
like tip the scales
and like manipulate the house cup, unless the situation was such that they are only allowed to take points and only from their own house.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
Like, in that way, it's like, they would never do it because it hurts their own cause, but, like, they have the power in terms of, like, discipline to, like, that gives them something they can do.
It does give them something that they can do. I mean, I suppose the underlying premise would be that, like, only students who they felt were up to the task and responsibility of being prefix would be capable of doing such things, and therefore, like, hopefully wouldn't be abusing their power, but I know that that's definitely something that I'm saying.
Yeah, that's optimistic.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, you know, like, because people never abuse their power.
Oh, I know. It's just like, I mean, I was wondering, like, wonder if you could, like, only take points away from yours or, like, only award points to other houses or something.
That would be an interesting way to do it.
But even that, I think I'm okay with they can take points from their house, but not award points in any way. Because, like, otherwise it's like, there's no way Slytherin continues to win for, like, 7 years in a row. Like, you know, at some point the other houses are like we all just sort of agree whoever's in second place, right? Like, everyone just give them like 50 points.
Right. So we got to end this dynasty.
Yeah, like, let's
gotta
go. Come on.
Come to an end. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. So that was the thing that immediately caught me there. I was like, we don't see it happen very often. I don't think it comes up again at all until Order of the Phoenix. So
yeah.
There's that.
Still taking points from his own house. Come on, Percy.
I know. Classic Percy.
Classic.
From there, though, we kind of get like sort of like the evolution of Hermione as a character, who sort of like had gone back to the like that line from, you know, book one where it's sort of like, you know, if we get in any more trouble, we could be expelled or killed or worse, expelled.
Yeah.
You know, this is like one of those things where you're starting to see like Hermione is like, okay, sometimes in order to do the right things, we're going to need to break some rules. And including in the name of figuring out what's going on, we're going to need to be able to get inside of the Slytherin common room undercover so that Malfoy doesn't know who we are. So we're going to have to steal a book from the restricted section and brew a like
illegal potion and steal the ingredients. And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many stepped. I love that her play in two books in a row, like as soon as she's like, oh boy, I'm feeling feisty here, I'm gonna break some rules, it's like, you know what we need to do, the restricted section. Oh my God. Like, we've looked for everywhere for Nicholas Flamel. Not in the restricted section.
I know, yeah.
It's Have like a nice Christmas. her dastardly plans are like, what if we get different books?
Right, yeah. Right. Yes, yeah.
Very Hermione way of thinking.
Right. This would be like going to like your favorite restaurant and be like, hold on now, I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to order something different today. It's like, what? No way.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, stepping out from your favorite menu.
Also, not for nothing. I don't want to like rag on Hermione here too much because I enjoy her rule breakingness, but like her plan as it is to get in, just to get into the Slytherin common room, where she's positive that Malfoy's probably boasting about it in the Slytherin common room right now. If only we could hear him. Like, she wants to first steal or find a way to get a book from the restricted section, and then find a way to steal the ingredients for the potion, and then brew the potion, which is already going to be against the rules, and take a month. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like just Harry has an invisibility cloak. You know what I mean?
Right. Just follow like, one of the Slytherins to the common room.
Just follow one of them in.
Yeah. It's like,
listen outside the door for the password. Wait till the middle of the night. Go in then. All right, done.
Be under invisibility cloak.
Be invisible.
Like. I know. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It's like one of those things where it's like, if only there was a way to be inside of that room without being noticed in any way, shape, or form. Do we have anything that could potentially achieve that? No, let's make a month-long plan and steal a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
It'll totally work.
It'll totally work.
Yeah.
I won't turn myself into a cat.
Yep. But so anyway, then in order to get into the restricted section, Hermione is just basically like... I think, said Hermione, that if we just made it sound as though we were just interested in theory, we might stand a chance. And this is in the name of getting a note to go into the restricted section, to which Ron responds, oh, come on, no teacher's going to fall for that. They'd have to be really thick.
Yeah.
And I wrote next to it, and say it with me, how thick can you get?
Oh, so true. I love it. You know, the other reason that bothers me, they don't think of the cloak, is that the first time Hermione suggests breaking into the restricted section, Harry's like, cloak.
Yes. Yeah. I know. It's like we've done this move before.
Yeah, we've done this move before. Don't even try it. Come on, dude. But whatever. Anyway. Also, it's interesting that she lists that the book that Polyjuice Potion is in is called Most Potent Potions, which let's see. Snape says it's in there, but like we know it is a 6th-year potion you should be able to brew, according to Slughorn, means that the potion should be in advanced potion making, which Snape should also know because we know he has a very old copy of advanced potion making.
He does indeed. The one that he is. The like, one, basically yeah. created.
The Half-Blood Prince copy.
Yes,
So even... older versions of it would have this potion in it.
Right?
No, I don't know. Whatever. I guess Snape is just sort of like, yeah, don't buy that one. It's only in this one. Polyjuice.
Maybe it's just a good way to deter younger students from going and trying like something that's like out of their league a little bit.
I guess so. Don't ask the 6th-years.
Right, that's NEWT level.
Jay. Right, okay.
Yes, indeed, yep. Anyway, so that should round us off for Chapter 9. Looking forward to Chapter 10, The Rogue Bludger, which means we're back to Quidditch. I'm excited about that one.
Wonderful chapter art on The Rogue Bludger.
Absolutely glorious. Do you have a review to close us out for the day?
Well, but of course I do, Ben. All right, so this is from No Need to Call Me Sir, Professor. Fantastic.
That's so good.
Great one. So it's the best podcast since the pop. Well, thank you so much. I love this podcast so much. It's something I've always wanted but never knew I did. I've been with you guys since year one, and it's awesome to see your growth. My question is this. Do you see a scenario where Harry keeps the stone and uses it to let the families of everyone who died at the Battle of Hogwarts say their final goodbyes? Maybe he would even hold on to it for long enough so that when Teddy is old enough, he can meet his parents.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I know. I was like, well, now that, what an interesting thing. Here's the thing, is that like, I love the sentiment and I love the idea. However, my argument would be that Harry, as the master of death, would understand that like, that is not actually that helpful.
I think that you're correct. And I think like, while I love the sentiment expressed, by there's no need to call me sir.
That's their name.
Yeah. It does devastate me to think that like inside of the Battle of Hogwarts, both Lupin and Tonks die. basically leaving Teddy as like an orphan, which is like sort of then like somebody that Harry is going to look after in a capacity, as we know, like going into the epilogue and everything. It's really sad because like we also, you know, started the story with an orphan, and now this is sort of like almost like the baton being passed,
right,
in a way that you don't want to have happen,
right?
Like that really is like difficult. And I've even contemplated this a lot. Like I was wondering if there was like a really good reason why all of the Marauders, like I was wondering if there was a reason that you could explain why all the Marauders needed to die before Harry could complete his mission. Because basically what you end up with, I mean, Peter obviously doesn't show up with the Resurrection Stone, but otherwise James, Sirius, and Lupin
all do.
Yeah. And then if you want to call Lily like an honorary member of the Marauders by proximity or right. something, or James's spouse, you know, it's sort of like an interesting one that they're all there to then like walk him into the forest. But I do think that like so much of what's happening inside of that scene is like Harry is doing the thing that everybody else who has sought the Deathly Hallows was attempting to overcome, which is he was going to face death,
right?
Like on purpose, like that was his goal, which I think is otherwise largely contrary to people who were attempting to
yes, I think so.
Seek these objects. So I think the unfortunate reality is that any amount of ongoing use of the stone would probably spur on. Look, I think it would make it. It would once again make it a highly coveted object.
I know. I think like the idea that like, oh, it's nice that like, oh yeah, you could say one final goodbye to these people, but like that's not how it would go down. I don't think like once people knew it was possible to see those people again, like they would always want to.
Yes.
And they would not. It would feel like you were offering closure, but it would deny them closure.
Right. Right. Because then I think that like what would end up happening is lots of people who were dealing with loss would then be sort of like attempting to like bargain a little bit, like they get like stuck right. in that stage, like, well, maybe there's still a chance,
right?
You know, maybe one more time, like maybe I can say that, you know, like the last goodbye. So I don't know. I mean more than anything else, I think it's contrary to the themes of the story.
Yeah.
But it is otherwise a beautiful sentiment to imagine a world where young Teddy gets to
that does feel like a bit of fan fiction where like Teddy finds the stone in the forest or something.
It totally does. Yeah. Like it seems like a one-off type of situation where he's like drawn out into the forest, you know, or like, you know, here's the call of a werewolf.
Maybe. Oh, already like it. Already like so it. Bad. Yeah.
It gets out there and ends up stumbling across it. I think that'd be pretty cool. That would be pretty cool. So, I want it. I love the question. I love the sentiment. I want it for Teddy, but I think Harry does the right thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. But great question. Good consideration.
Yes, yes, absolutely.
Yes. Well, otherwise, I think that is going to do it. If you have a question for us or just want to, you know, if you just enjoy the podcast, please go leave us a review on whatever podcasting platform you're using. It is very helpful in increasing the discoverability of Through the Gryffindor. So thank you for that. But otherwise, join us next time as we go through Chapter 10, The Rogue Bludger, here on Through the Gryffindor.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.